Well, the simplest way, if we play the game of opposites, we talk about goodness as people feeling like they're thriving together. The opposite of that is you're not winning at my expense. Also, you're not profiting at my expense. And so one of the five factors that organizations, their employees say, yes, goodness pays here. One of them is that profitability is a concept that's good for everybody. You have to have money to reinvest in people, in quality, in missional growth. Otherwise, that's not goodness. People are not thriving together. And so we embrace capitalism. We talk about as long as everyone, we're all winning together when the organization wins financially, you can maintain this condition we call goodness for a long, long time, especially if people don't feel like they're, you know, winning at someone else's expense.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Learn It All podcast. If you believe in the power of teams and collaboration and working in a psychologically safe environment, and you notice that sometimes getting work done in those generous places can seem like a challenge, then you may be interested in this concept of healthy collaboration, healthy accountability. And to clear up that idea, we are joined today by Paul Botts. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here and I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Again, we are Damon Lemby, the CEO of Learn It, Darren Bridget, Chief Learning Architect at Learn It. And let's just dive right in. Paul, can you tell us a little bit about your story? You are the co-founder of Good Leadership. You're the author of 6 books, including the latest, Good Leadership is a Team Sport. You've been out there doing public speaking, coaching. You're interviewing CEOs and large companies all the time. Can you fill us in a little bit on your story?
Yeah, absolutely. I started out in public relations and advertising, and that's really the science of moving the masses and how they think. So it's a sociological science. And I was introduced to an executive coach while I was a principal and president of a firm. And I was fascinated with the work that he was doing with me. And one of my mentors mentioned to me that's a growth industry and thought that I had real that I understood strategy, I understand influence. And he's like, I've got this team that I want you to work with in my organization. I did it. I was completely hooked. And so I made a career change into the industrial organizational psychology field. I was the president of that firm because I knew how to grow businesses. I was in charge of business development and stuff like that. And I left that firm during the Great Recession because our business was really, really struggling. And I thought about it not as a psychologist, but as more of an organizational development challenge. And I just started to see opportunities that my other partners couldn't see. And so after a difficult conversation with my wife, I had 2 kids in college, and we just decided we would try it together. So my wife, Melinda, and I own this firm together, and we're now in our 15th year of business. And the message that really stuck from day one is that we wanted to build a firm around this idea that we believe goodness pays. And the timing was perfect because if you remember back in that time, it was way worse doing business in the Great Recession than it was in COVID. When the financial infrastructure of businesses goes away, people start to question each other, argue, fight, lots of mistrust. And we were pretty depressed, everybody. And so when I started talking about goodness and asking the question of business leaders, do you believe goodness pays? The groundswell really started to the point where 2 very prominent Minneapolis CEOs put up a bunch of money for us to do a research project called How Goodness Pays. And we really ended up developing an organizational effectiveness framework. And probably the most important thing we learned was a definition that most people could say, yep, we agree with that definition of goodness. That allowed us to talk about it freely, and then to build an infrastructure in terms of
toolkits and learning things like you guys know how to do. So the definition of goodness is this: when people feel like they're thriving together in a culture of encouragement, accountability, and positive teamwork. So today, good leadership. We are in our 15th year of business. We're a general contractor business model. We find work and deploy executive coaches who know a lot about coaching processes and also development programs. And they're all subcontractors because the best executive coaches definitely do not want a boss. So here we are, year 15. We're in most states of the union and have several multinational clients as well. So it's wonderful. And along with it includes a publishing label called Good Leadership Press, where we publish those books you refer to.
That's great, Paul. When I was preparing for this, I was reading one of your blogs, and I like how you kicked off the story about the Ritz-Carlton and their service of excellence. And it brought me back to 2005. I actually took my Learnit team out to Pentagon, the Ritz-Carlton out there, and we went and experienced the entire framework and process. I thought it was great. Can you share a little bit about what's so great about the Ritz-Carlton, what they do?
Yeah, I've been through that same exact experience twice in two different decades of my life. And what I learned about that experience more than anything is how culture is formed. And they're very, very clear. They say culture is the sum total of what gets rewarded and stopped. And you could also say punished. And actually, some things need to be punished if you're going to have a healthy organization over time. And so the idea that you always keep the customer front and center, and if you've got a good rationale for why you're doing something, nobody's ever going to stop you from doing it as long as people feel like they're thriving together and enjoying the environment. And I never forgot that in going through that very first experience like you did. And my wife and I get to travel a lot and we see a lot of places. And we have one particular Ritz-Carlton in Tucson, Arizona. It's called Dove Mountain. That is our favorite hotel in the entire world. And I have had some of my best ideas there. I've taken teams and clients and our staff, and my wife and I went there for our 35th wedding anniversary, took all of our kids. And there's no place I feel the same way as I do there. And so that's when we started talking about, okay, if we were going to write about healthy accountability, what kind of places and what kind of spaces do we feel like accountability is a good thing? And that we can study it from that angle, because our research so far shows that 80% of employees think accountability is a punitive concept. So there you go. We have to rewrite the narrative. So that's why I like the Ritz-Carlton so much. I also love the fact that they have a model and they train to it very, very consistently. They don't leave it to chance. And I think you guys know in your business, Learnit, and I certainly know it, good leadership. If we're going to help people go from one place to another, we have to have a structured process with really good ideas, very clearly articulated things that people can grab on and use right away. So that's why I'm so in love with Ritz-Carlton.
It's funny, Tucson, Arizona, of all places, there's a place in Tucson called Canyon Ranch. And that is my favorite place to go in the world. When I step onto Canyon Ranch, I feel like just the service and how they take care of you is great. My one takeaway I remember from the Ritz-Carlton, I remember a lot, but I love how they said, if somebody shows up and let's say you don't have an iron in the room, you don't just say, that's not my responsibility. You help connect and get it taken care of instead of just passing the buck. I think it's great. Question for you is, so your firm is an organizational effectiveness firm. What does that mean?
Well, it means this. The name of our firm is Good Leadership, and we believe you cannot have an effective organization without good leadership. And we also believe you can't have good leadership without goodness. So when you talk about the organizational effectiveness category, it's basically about, is the organization set up to deliver consistently what it promises to customers, shareholders, and employees? That means the teams at the top need to be aligned, including board and executive team. Today, everything is so collaborative that you also need all the teams of teams aligned. And then we believe that employees, in order to consistently deliver on promises, they need to have the shortest line to the customer as possible. So people who think about themselves as, we don't have any line of sight to outside customers, I will tell you that's an organization that has very little alignment to its core purpose. So in addition to that, So in order to be a good at organizational effectiveness, you have to have coaching processes that help people align, commit, and be accountable. And then also, you need to have organizations, especially today, the organization needs to be set up with development programs where people learn how to work together. This idea of leadership development, so much of the curriculum is individual based. You say, well, what makes a good leader? People will say things like integrity and honesty. And those are their virtues. They're extremely important, but they're also individual. We think that good leadership is a plural concept, and we can measure how well people are aligned, committed to one another, and doing the things they need to succeed. It's always a plural concept, most often in teams, but the new world today that's so collaborative, especially the younger people who expect to be included in things, it's now teams of teams. It's getting more and more complicated. And so that's what we say when we say to ourselves that we're an organizational effectiveness firm. We don't really compete with individual executive coaches. Most of our engagements employ multiple coaches coaching multiple people. So that's what we mean.
It's great. Paul, this idea of doing good seems really important to me. And you can find it in previous literature on how to run a good business. They're having a mission-driven business, and people today want purpose and a sense of mission. But I have had a little bit of a crisis of faith recently. Yeah. Kara Swisher's book, The Burn Book, did you hear? Yeah, right?
You know of it. I haven't read it.
No, I haven't read it either, but I've heard her out there talking about how this was all a little bit of House of Cards. It was really just about making money and all this talk about disrupting the world and making the world a better place. So I guess what I mean when what I want to know from you to try to reinvigorate my own faith is, like, what do you really mean by goodness that isn't just words?
Yeah. Well, the simplest way, if we play the game of opposites, we talk about goodness as people feeling like they're thriving together. The opposite of that is you're not winning at my expense. Mm-hmm. And also you're not profiting at my expense. And so one of the five factors that organizations that their employees say, yes, goodness pays here. One of them is that profitability is a concept that's good for everybody. And even in our nonprofit clients, we talk about profitability. You have to have money to reinvest in people, in quality, in missional growth. Otherwise, that's not goodness. People are not thriving together. And so we embrace capitalism. We embrace it. And we talk about, as long as everyone is, we're all winning together when the organization wins financially, you can maintain that this condition we call goodness for a long, long time. Especially if people don't feel like they're, you know, winning at someone else's expense.
Yeah, it's really the way you play the game and the transparency and the attitude about it. Funnily enough, that's what Kara Swisher says. I think some people were a little bit more transparent and honest than others. Mm-hmm. Moving off that to this idea of accountability.
Yeah.
Because you transitioned into this idea of accountability. It's like you started with good leadership. Let's do good. Focus on that. But there was a gap there. That made you think, hey, we got to pivot into this. Can you tell us the why?
Yeah, absolutely. So the why behind the healthy accountability work is that when we started to research organizations that really were very effective, we noticed that the employees in those organizations actually seek out accountability. It's seen as something that is a career enhancer, that it's going to help people. You're going to learn new things. And it's more fun to be on the cutting edge of things that need to be done in order to advance the organization. And the opposite of that is what we're hearing from a lot of our clients, that they're one of the things most of our CEOs will agree with is that accountability since COVID and since the flexible hybrid work environment is getting harder and harder to put our fingers on. And this idea that people, the employees have so much more power today in the equation. Unless you're one of those employees that has to go to work on site, like a construction worker or a hospital worker, most of us are realizing freedoms we've hardly, maybe historically never had. So we seem to be getting our work done that's on our to-do list, especially if it's tied to a customer. And we seem to be getting the work done that has visibility to the C-suite or stuff that might help you get promoted. But it's that value-added stuff in the middle.
Could you say a little more? What do you mean by value-added exactly?
Yeah, so it's not critical today. And it's going to be good for all of us when we get it done, but it's not so urgent. And it might not have anybody looking over your shoulder saying, when is that going to get done? So it's the thing that really improve our organizations over a 6 to 24 month time horizon. And I know in a professional services firm like mine, if we get too busy putting out fires or too busy with brand new clients, I can guarantee you 6 to 9 months from now, we're going to have a big lull because of the stuff we're not doing today. And there's a lot of data out there about personal productivity and also about happiness. Happiness is up and personal productivity is up. Organizational productivity, not so much. If you really look at the data, it's pretty compelling. It's across most of the professional services firms that measure this stuff. So we think about healthy accountability as people want more of it. They're not afraid of it. It's not punitive. It's not reactive. And we just don't see much of that yet. We're in the process of getting this research going right now, and it's been really fascinating to study.
Paul, do you think now that the research is out that personal productivity has picked up, but organizational productivity hasn't, maybe it's even decreased, and there's been a shift in the economy and things are getting tougher, do you think things are going to change where, for one, there's going to be more people asked or required to come back to the office? And maybe some of the shift will go away from the, like you said, the employees having a lot more to say to swinging back. I don't think it'll ever go back to when it was before, but do you think we're going to see more in-person work as far as accountability?
We are seeing more in-person work. Whether or not the trend is going to continue or not, I really can't predict it. But one of the things we're learning is that organizations that negotiate with each other well seem to be way ahead. So there's a concept that we call shared commitments. And we also think David Meister was a guru in the 1980s, Harvard business professor. And he really helped a lot of the law firms in New York City and in Boston get along in the 70s and 80s during that really high greed period. And he was really fascinated with this concept called nagging rights. So we talk about shared commitments with nagging rights. You agree something that's good for you and good for me. And then if you get a whole group of people to agree on it, now it's called a shared commitment. And it's only as strong as my ability to grant you nagging rights. So if you see me do it a different way than I said I would, I'm encouraging you and asking for you to say, hey, Damon, we agreed not to do that. I need to help you get back on track. So that's shared commitments with nagging rights. Organizations that do that well are ahead of the game. Their people are finding ways to work together in ways that are good for everyone, the company, the employee, and the customer. They seem to be getting more of that value-added work done because that negotiating is a part of their culture. Mm. And we think that's a huge part of where we're going to end up with the findings to discover the secrets to healthy accountability. And it's a topic that I have a lot of passion for. We've been working on that concept for many, many years before COVID. And I think it's one of the hallmarks of what we teach at Good Leadership.
I'm excited in speaking with you and Katie, how Learned's going to start participating in your research project. Can you tell us a little bit about your research project and what sparked your idea to move forward with it?
Yeah. So let me start with what sparked my idea first. In 1 week, I had two CEO conversations. The headline on that 1 week was, trust me, no one's going to get fired over this. And it was a big debacle. An organization that had made a lot of their money distributing a private label product that somebody else made, that product failed. And they had to pull all of it. So they had a clause in their contract that they could develop their own version of that as long as they got it to a certain point in a 90-day window. Well, guess what? They missed the 90-day window. And it was a whole bunch of things that went wrong. And the CEO was mad as a hornet, but had to fly overseas on an airplane thinking about it. When he landed, he realized, no. There was a whole breakdown in a bunch of the system. Their accountability system was all based on individuals doing what they said they would do. There was no overlap. There was no helping. There was no checking in on one another. They hadn't really built the why statement for why it was so important. And he said, we need to shift that. It's got to go away from individual and character-based to an organizational competency that we can help each other be accountable for big things that are going to really change our organization. And I just was really impressed at his learning attitude and the humility that went with that, because nothing would have changed except for bad things had he fired two or three people who let that deadline drop. Same week, another client called and said the value-added comment. And he said, what am I going to do to change my culture? And I said, well, we're going to have to study this at a broader level. And so he volunteered some money and some people in his organization to pitch in and start what we called a steering team. So every time we tackle one of these research projects, like the How Goodness Pays research we did 9 years ago, we start a steering team. These are people who are passionate about the subject, who are willing to give resources from their organization and their time. And we begin with the end in mind and say, when we have the secrets to healthy accountability, what do you need? How are you going to use it? And how do you need to show that it improved your organization? So it's a really intense whole brain exercise to do an accountability, a steering team exercise. And then we provide choices, and our clients tell us pragmatic ideas about why they like this choice over this choice. And so that's how we got started with this particular project that happened in February. We're working on a very rapid timeline. We'll have our research done, packaged, and delivered at a conference on November 22nd. And for people who do big research projects, that this is really fast. A university would take 3.5 years to do this kind of work. And so steering teams first. And one of the first things the steering team did was craft a series of questions to pique their own interest. And then we interviewed them each, and they came back and told us what they learned by just preparing and participating. So eventually we'll end up with 60 participating companies that'll allow us to benchmark in different pods, if you will. And then after that, we will do a very large survey, a broad scale survey that'll give us a baseline. And then we'll be able to do benchmarking for everybody. Like your organization is going to participate. We'll be able to come back and show you what we learned from your organization and how you compare with others. And I can already tell you that we're learning things at the organizational level, at the team leader level, and then at the individual level for people to have conversations differently with their managers. It's really exciting stuff.
Got some of these questions right here. It's a good list. Am I allowed to look at this before the actual?
Absolutely, you are. Absolutely. All right. We want your quiet mind working on it.
Get going now. Yeah. So look at a couple of these right here. What three things need to be true for you to feel fully accountable in your work?
Yeah.
What are some of the kind of answers that you're seeing from people right now when it comes to accountability? Has it been surprises so far? How close are you, I guess, to the finish line as part of it, right?
Well, like any good research project, you can see things emerging very, very early. And The moment that really turned the steering team experience in a different direction was when people were exhausted. We use whole brain, everybody's tired. You use all the different muscles in your head. And one person just said, you know, it seems to me that we do our best work on work that we love for people we love. And it's such a simple concept. And I think the biggest learning is that the way accountability has been written about, it's been written about for about 50 years in the literature, maybe 70, depending on how far you want to go back in certain kinds of things. But it's been written about in two ways. One, sort of as a character virtue. You're supposed to do what you said you would do, the kind of thing that your grandmother and your mom taught you. And that works to a certain point, but things change. Context changes. We're learning now in this flexible hybrid environment, things change a lot. So the virtue approach is people feel wronged a lot in that approach. Well, you said you would do it. The other piece is coming out of project management and things like Lean Six Sigma and the quality movement, where an accountability can be step gated. You got your swim lanes, you got to do this, then you do this, you do this, you do this. And it's a very sort of a structural, intellectual way of thinking about it. What's missing is the idea that we're human beings. We have an emotional core. We do our best work on things we love for people we love. And we're not really finding anybody that's writing or going down that path. And so you can imagine we're probing on that very heavily, Darren.
It's great. It doesn't, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels to me like so much what we're talking about is you get knowledge work in the mix.
Yeah.
And knowledge work doesn't fit into Taylorism. It just, you can't try to organize it that way.
Yeah.
And so how do you hold people accountable when what you're working on is something that requires iteration and flexibility and some space to come up with ideas?
Yep.
It's a different beast. And again, you need to have a shared conversation in an organization to get there.
Yeah.
It can't just be, individually do this and it's all going to magically work out.
Yeah. There's a couple other themes that are emerging that I think are fascinating. And that is when we do interviews, about 50% of the people so far have been saying accountability is a proactive concept, very planful. And then the other half are saying it's a reactive thing that ends up being based on triage. And then also there's always some sort of a consequence or punishment there, not really learning based. Mm-hmm. And so that's in the discussions. When we go out to broader populations, we've been doing this for about 18 months using audience response technique with your phone. We're learning that employees in general, about 80% of them, 4 out of 5 say it's definitely a punitive concept in their organizations. Mm-hmm. So we've got a big gap about the concept of accountability. And I think about accountability as the glue for goodness. So if goodness is when people are thriving together with encouragement, accountability, and positive teamwork, you don't really get goodness without accountability. Eventually, you've got to be able to count on things and count on people and get the things done your organization says it'll do. And so we think this is fundamental. It's not frosting, if you will, it's cake.
Yeah.
I like how you said that. I also would think, especially on the employee side, when it comes to the frustration, must have a lot to do around trust, right, Paul? Where employees feel like, well, I'm not trusted. That's why our managers are harping on accountability. Is that true?
Yeah. And once again, when we get into the trust subject, it becomes so individual. Mm-hmm. I don't trust you. You don't trust me. And what we're learning is this concept, when it's alive, it's a plural concept. It involves many, many people. And there was another teaching moment that happened in one of the early interviews where a professional services firm basically said, we have a client framework where we're going to get back to you with a recommendation and a plan inside of 2 weeks, always, always, always. Well, what happens if it's December 15 in Western culture? That 2 weeks is very unlikely to be held because of how many other people need to be involved. And so sure, you can have those kind of hard and fast rules, but this then ends up putting us into a genre that we call, when we do leadership work, we call it commitment planning. Mm-hmm. It's helping people in advance think through, who do you need to work with? How are your relationships with them? Are they supportive or are they adversarial? And who else needs you? Who do you need? What can you anticipate that could go right or could go wrong? Because without that kind of commitment planning, it's extremely difficult to actually make a promise that's important and keep it. And we think that's a management skill set that's probably not been taught very consistently for many, many years. We've pretty much been in the leadership era for about 30 years. It was in the 1990s when people were still teaching general management skills. I don't really know very many companies at all are doing that anymore.
So a lot of it feels like marketing a little bit too. So it sounds better to call it leadership instead of manager training.
I agree. And the theme for a breakfast series that we do this year is celebrating the magic of managers and people been coming out of the woodwork. It's a subject that just hasn't been talked about much.
It's great. I think managers are heroes. Middle managers have such a tough role and they're so indispensable because they're balancing what comes from above and what comes from below and trying to connect them. And, it's the group that's getting the most burnt down.
Yeah, under-resourced too. Holy moly, it's amazing to watch these people work. They are very resourceful, the good ones for sure.
Yeah.
So, Paul, let me ask you this. If an organization wants to get involved in your project, a business wants to get involved in your project, what do they do?
Well, it's a very simple stage in the process. We don't need any money anymore. We raised all the money we need to do the research in a really good way.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's, you know what? Sometimes a plan works, right?
Crowdsourced it, right? Didn't you crowdsource the funding?
Yeah, we did. And there are about 20 spots left in the research at the moment. If somebody wants to jump on this quickly, you can send me an email at paul@goodleadership.com or they can reach out to you guys and you know how to reach us. But it's really quite simple at this point. Where we're looking for organizations that are, two or three layers of management. You could say mid-size, but we have a handful of smaller firms as well. We have three or four multinationals who are sending us to different pockets of their organization. At this stage, all we need to do is interview three people, one at a C-suite level, one at a mid-level, and one individual contributor. Some of our clients are sending us many, many more people to interview than that, which is fine, minimum of three. And then soon, in the August timeframe, there will be a quantitative survey, about 60 questions. And that we are using that to, that'll allow us to benchmark against a broad-based survey that we have contracted with a fantastic partner called AmbaVista, who's going to help us really get a very rich data set from medium, large, and multinational companies that we can benchmark against. So it's not all that difficult. And then there's going to be a conference on November 22nd in Minneapolis where we're going to reveal the secrets to creating a culture of healthy accountability.
You're not allowed to break that news here, like what the secrets are, I suppose. Because we'll take it if you know.
He doesn't have them yet. He needs to do the Learn It Team interviews.
Yeah, there you go. That's the magic right there.
Yeah.
I love that you say, Paul, the magic. Because back when Learn It started, back in 1995 as a computer training company where we came from, my dad's first tagline for Learn It was teaching the magic of computers. And these days people laugh at that term, but it's old school. It's on my wall back here. But I love that you bring that back because I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, well, it came from, you know, we've had a breakfast series going for 15 years. We've done 109 episodes. I have another one next week. It's called the Good Leadership Breakfast Series. And we did a research project 18 months ago in the room with our phones, and then we did it broad-based as well. And what we learned is that 82% of employees say that they expect that accountability in their organization comes from their direct manager. And then someone else said, the magic in our organization is with our managers. We treat them well, we train them well. And so we were like, geez, is anybody celebrating the magic of managers anymore? And that's how that whole thing came about. So, you know, the best ideas always come from other people, not ourselves.
It's good. I really want to use this nagging rights idea, but I think I want to start by getting other people to give me nagging rights first. Is that okay or is that rude?
Well, you know what? It's each of us has points in our lives when we are really, really self-centered. So we've just added some new people to our team here, and we did the shared commitments exercise last week, Thursday, at our quarterly meeting here. You talk about what are we trying to do? How fast do we need to get it done? And what are the kinds of things we can anticipate we're going to go through? And we come up with a list. We think the list shouldn't be any more than 5 to 7 things.
Yeah.
And then you discuss, well, what does committing to this look like?
Yeah.
And when you're done, you can say, okay, as your founder and CEO, I'm giving you guys all nagging rights because some of them I'm going to be the biggest violator. I just know. Habits are hard to break, but you know, if you do it in spirit of learning and giving everyone in the room, whether they're 24 years old or 61 like me, you're like, you got to give everybody the same level of responsibility, and that's to be good at nagging rights.
Yeah, it's good. It is one of the fun things about getting to do this kind of work, right, is that you go out and you test hypotheses and you get to bring this stuff back home and try it out with your team, see what it works. I mean, that's really the best way to know if you're onto something is you have to get it out in the real world and see how does it work.
Yeah. And we're also big fans of simplicity. I love threes. Very simple labels. And we use this concept called the naive reader for everything that we create. We want somebody who knows nothing about organizational effectiveness, nothing about good leadership, to grab something, read it from top upper left to bottom right and say, oh, I know what this is and why it exists. And that search for clarity is really, really important, the kind of work we do. And I'll give you one other example, and it relates to what we're learning in the study. One very wise person who's been at CHRO and 7 or 8 organizations said to me, you know what? It just occurred to me, I've been running selection systems for like 40 years in my career, and never once have we screened for accountability.
Amazing.
We screen for lots of things.
Yeah.
Gosh, I wonder how I could do it differently. And within about 15 minutes, we had already rethought how screening and selection systems can be redone if you really think accountability needs to be better in your organization.
Do you have an example of how they could do that? What would be an example? Because I think that's fantastic. But
yes.
How could you do that?
Well, there are always organizational implications, team implications, and individual. So the first thing we can do is that any really good psychometric, we're huge fans of Hogan, that any good psychometric has markers that indicate how people think about any subject you can think of. And it didn't take us more than about 10 minutes to come up with 5 or 6 markers in Hogan's to help us point towards how people think about accountability. So using some sort of a selection tool, a psychometric, will help you. Then most organizations do a pretty good job at creating an interview guide. And you can decide which questions are absolutely mission critical that everyone has to talk about. And so that was the simplest thing. Redo the interview guides, redo the calibration, and make sure that people start to think about accountability. One CEO who has a very successful track record of hitting sales goals, you know, over 100 quarters in a row, the first 3 interviews they do with anybody is all about their relationship with goal setting and accomplishing things. And they can tell after 3 interviews whether someone is really going to be good at this thing we call healthy accountability or not. And then at the organizational level, what kind of steering teams you put together that actually make hiring and promotion decisions, there is always a competency model or always a set of criteria. And simply putting whatever version of accountability that's in your head into that criteria will make a shift. That's how culture gets formed. Things that get rewarded and stopped. And so we have to reward people for getting good and asking questions about accountability.
So I want to reframe some of the takeaways here.
Sure.
Things that we've talked about is goodness pays. Goodness pays. Is that
goodness
it?
Goodness pays. Yes.
Goodness pays.
Goodness
pays. You can actually do that in the world. And right now, personal productivity is up. People are happy. But what's flagging is organizational accountability. And the answer isn't in changing character or these kind of old swim lane things that we used to do, but it's really a new approach to creating a kind of a different paradigm for how mm-hmm. does an organization create a culture of accountability.
Yep.
This is the research that you're involved in. It's something people can participate in. And meanwhile, yep. we're just all eagerly awaiting what you're going to discover.
That's it. That's a very, very good summary. And it's also, we think that like many things, leaders get to control narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And so another thing that we're starting to think about at the organizational level is just literally auditing how people talk about, you know, accomplishing things and learning things. And when the accountability word, the A word, when that word is discussed, what is the context? Is it a cry for accountability the way we think about it with politicians and crooked business people? Or is it a call for accountability, that it's something that improves us all, that we learn from the organization? And when our organization performs better, we all win together. So there are lots of choices leaders make about the narrative they use. And we're silly enough to think we can make an altruistic difference on a subject that's really important.
It's brilliant. And as we start to wrap up here, we have a signature question that we like to ask.
Awesome.
And people have gotten to know something about you, heard some of your stories. Here's the question. What is something that people would be surprised to learn about you? Something most people don't know, something that you're comfortable sharing. Again, our listeners, they're just meeting you. So maybe it's out there somewhere, but something maybe a lot of people would be surprised to learn about you.
It's easier for me to write a book than it is to read one. I probably have some sort of learning disability that's gone undiagnosed, but I almost failed out of my first year freshman year in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did not know how to study for college. And so I had a really good advisor who said to me, you know what? It's okay. You can figure out other ways of doing it. He literally showed me how he took notes. And he was a masterful note taker. And I was like, ooh, I can do that. And he said, so here's the deal. You can get through college if you show up for class every day, never skip, sit in the front row, get to know the professor, and take awesome notes. Yeah. And then he said, and here's the deal, go buy textbooks that are already highlighted by somebody else. He gave me permission to skip the reading in college, and I graduated cum laude, straight A's after that.
That's how you get, that's efficiency. That's ChatGPT before it showed up.
Yeah, but it also taught me that I could thrive if I showed up, I paid attention, I took good notes. That was the way I did recall. And I'm sure the fact that I got to know my profs, every single one of them, I asked them what they were looking for. They told me I was practicing then what I do now for a living. This is what I do every single day.
Yeah,
I show up in front of CEOs. We talk about the hardest stuff. I take good notes. I follow up. And it's what I do now. And because I'm such a good note taker, it's easy for me to formulate them into outlines that end up in books. And yeah, it's easier for me to write a book than read one.
That's a good one, Paul. I was kind of hoping, doing a little research myself, is that you were going to say that you're a huge Elton John impersonator.
Yep, I do love to bang on the piano. My family are all a bunch of musicians, and probably my nuclear family, our favorite activity is going through the Botts family living room songbook. There are a couple hundred songs in there, and I play and people sing. It's a blast.
That's great. Terrific. Well, Paul, it was really a pleasure to have you join us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, me too. You guys make it fun and easy, and I'm looking forward to we can figure out ways to help each other.
Yeah, let's do it. And again, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, goodleadership.com is our website, and you can come straight to me, paul@goodleadership.com. I hear from a lot of people, do a lot of speaking, and I love it. So come one, come all.
Brilliant. And to our listeners, thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Learn It All podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe, tell a friend. Until next time, remember to stay curious and keep learning.